The next thing she picks up is what we referred to earlier as, I'm calling the second definition, a disturbance in the archaic identity between subject and object. Page 7. And what I was saying earlier, she puts very precisely, the need for the dissolution of this identity arises at the moment when it becomes disturbing. That is, when the absence of projected content substantially interferes with adaptation so that the integration of the projected content into the subject is desirable. And a little bit, again, about the archaic identity. Again, I don't like the word primitives. I would say so-called primitives or pre-scientific peoples, whatever. And children have this archaic identity. And they don't distinguish between the inner and outer world. That, I think, is up for discussion. But I think what we can say, they are also able very easily to slip into a level of awareness where inner and outer are not differentiated. As she said, a child knows the doll is a doll, but it'll play with it as if it were alive. All examples of archaic identity. You, those of you who've been reading around in Jung might know the word participatio mystique, same word.
So Gary, in a piece of a childhood depression, you could say that possibly the child's already having trouble adapting because of whatever negative projections are on
it. I would think so.
Or it could be too much of a positive projection.
So the projections are so strong in childhood that the child cannot adapt.
Yeah. And, you know, that might, I mean, this is a good way to define what ego is. We think ego means egotism or something, but ego is the ability to distinguish what's a projection. And a child simply, the child feels itself to be the way it is seen. And a lot of adults do too. But what we're trying to do is help ourselves realize there's a difference between who we are and the way we are seen. But if you can't distinguish between who you are and the way you are seen, then you are living an archaic identity. Why archaic? Because you probably never were able to distinguish between yourself and the way you were seen. Adolescence, I mean, this is why adolescents are so charming and difficult at the same time. All that energy going into appearance, because they feel they are the way they are seen. And you can devastate them by seeing them in a certain way. And adults say, well, that's your opinion. So a weak ego can't distinguish, and a strong ego can. But it's still hard. Because you're always a little confused. Now, is what that person said right or not? So that's that paragraph.
How does that work with someone, say, who an
animal woman, who then just projects them? Yeah.
Is that go back to how her ego is not developed enough to, and she just takes that on?
I think part of it's normal. But it can go too far.
If you separate yourself out.
Yeah, like Marilyn Monroe, you know. The thing she complained about all the time was emptiness. Well, she was empty. She was simply what the male fantasy wanted her to be. As I say, I think part of that's normal, but when it goes too far, then it goes too far.
Well, it seems like someone like her, or even Nietzsche, where they're separated out from the larger group,
yeah,
that could give you more information. It seems to me that she was alone a lot.
Even when she was with, I think she was alone.
Mm-hmm.
As much as I love Arthur Miller, you know, he would say, well, these damn people, you know, this is what they turned her into. No, this is the projection she accepted. But it is so powerful. And, you know, I think since we live in a patriarchy, women make a lot of money by assuming that projection. They can end up with just everything. Because it's the male who has access to capital. And if she pleases his projection, she makes out quite handsomely. It's extremely dangerous for a woman. Okay, five steps in the withdrawal of projections. She gives an example of a Nigerian soldier who heard a voice calling to him from a tree.
Where are we?
A bottom of 9.
Oh.
Zooming right along.
Yeah, I had a question as to what were they, I think I had 3, 4, and 5, right? But
yeah, well, I counted 6.
You counted 6?
Yeah.
Okay.
Here's what I made of it. See what you think. First is identity. That is like the projected state. Then differentiation. Then moral evaluation. That goes to your question. Moral evaluation. The third.
Identity and then
differentiation.
Differentiation.
And then moral evaluation. Then it is written off as an illusion. Then it is seen as a psychological fact, or psychic existence. That's the fifth. And then I think there's one more, page 11, the sixth, is the moral integration.
Gary, could you just give an example and take us through the whole
thing? Yeah. So she gives the example of this soldier who got arrested because he tried to break out of the ranks since a tree told him to come to him. That's kind of far from our experience. Let's say our hero worship or it's a little difficult because that's kind of personal, kind of collective. Or let's say that of my Korean friends, the spirit that lives in the side of that temple. That would be the first step. Second step would be, no, Gary walked over there and nothing happened to him. Second step would be, why do we always pick one guy on the team as the hero when they're all working their butts off? You begin to doubt the projected state. The more evaluation would be, well, you know, heroes are good things. Or with my Korean friends, are they malevolent or benevolent spirits? Let's say they're malevolent spirits, just for the sake of argument. Now, the fourth one, I think, applies more correctly to the spirits in the temple, but I'll try to stretch it to the hero. The written off as an illusion would say, there's no spirits. You're indulging in childish thinking. With our hero example, this idea of heroes is stupid. All the guys are working hard. Get that hero stuff out of your head. With me so far? Now, the fifth stage is saying there are heroes, and they're in each of us. So I am projecting my hero onto a sports figure. With our Korean friends, it would be, well, I am capable of doing destructive deeds, assuming it's a negative spirit. Or if it's a positive spirit, I am capable of doing more positive things than I realize. And then the sixth would be, what is my hero asking me to do now? Or with the if we're saying a negative spirit in the temple, how do I need to be careful of my negativity? What is my negativity, and can I find a good use for it? See, it's moral evaluation. Taking the thing, wrestling with it, and finding its positive value.
I'm thinking of the movie Passage to India.
Yeah, go ahead.
That story, how she projects her sensuality.
Right.
And is so fearful of it.
And then goes crazy, doesn't she?
Goes crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. So she couldn't say, or maybe she could. Where would she be on that? She might be. She might have differentiated, huh?
She's still unwilling to separate from it. Like,
she might still be identified.
Mm-hmm. And or unwilling to look at it.
You can see what a threat this is to the weak ego. I'm thinking of von Franz wrote that paper on the berserker. Do you know about the berserker? The German myth of war was that in battle, the warriors would get possessed by a divine rage. And in that rage, they were called berserkers. It's really the origin of our word berserk. And berserker means bear shirt. So they thought that a bear would come down and put a shirt on it, put a bear's coat on them, and then they go off, you know, in this frenzy, war frenzy. And the way she worked with that, I mean, you think, what could be positive about that? And she said you find that kind of psychology in people with poor boundaries. So that rage, which could be projected, let's say, an ideal of a rageful warrior, if it's integrated and if that projection is withdrawn and you then try to wrestle with it morally, would be the strength to begin to be clear about yes and no. So that's why this moral bit is so important. Often what's projected is awful and you simply just can't go living it out. I mean, you can if you're a gangster, but if you want to be true to your conscience, you have to find a positive way to express it. And if it's a positive projection, you've got to get the lead out of your butt and do something positive in life, rather than admire positive people. be a hero yourself.
That's funny that moral evaluation comes before illusion or writing it off. It seems like, it seems like the illusion, or if you get to that stage, if the illusion is written off,
yeah,
that you're just, that's kind of your end point. You give up.
That's the end point for many people.
But if moral evaluation, if that's done before, if you would find it,
I feel like there are two moral evaluations. One at that stage, and then the final one where you say, well, what task is this?
Mm-hmm. And you could have faltered at any point.
Yeah, but if you found something good in it, why would you just...
Because it means you have to work to be a positive person yourself.
You know how Jung talks about in marriage as a psychological relationship, the container and the contained.
Mm-hmm.
Projection plays a huge role in that, and,
mm-hmm.
and you know, the thing is to be able to contain your own content,
mm-hmm.
right? So to me, at the end here, it's that you have managed to contain your own content and serve them.
That's the kicker. Either way, serve them. In other words, projection isn't withdrawn until you're able to serve them.
Now, I don't know how that works with the second type of projection we're talking about, but in the first definition,
yeah,
when it's,
I think it's
something
the same.
That's never been in within you, you still must contain it within yourself.
Well,
when you come in contact,
we'll look at this again, but let's just mention briefly, for the sake of discussion, the difference between integrating it into the ego and integrating it into the self. Integrating it into the ego would be to say, if I'm projecting the hero, I need to be stronger. I need to be more reliable. I need to take chances. See that? Then it becomes an ego function. I do, I do, I do, I do. If you integrate it into the self, it would be the voice that is continually giving you new ideas. You don't make up the ideas, but you find the ideas in yourself. You find the values and the challenges within yourself. So, and I think the more the content is collected, let's say our Nigerian guy with the spirits in the tree, the more you integrate it into yourself. You will. Your ego cannot come up with these ideas. You are dependent on inspirations. Those inspirations are what that spirit would be if you find it in yourself.
Could you say that last part about the integration into the self?
Yeah, it becomes a point of inspiration, a constant point of inspiration.
Okay.
And it becomes like another intelligence. Your ideas, your values are given to you creatively from within. You're not looking outside for what's inspiring. You become a source of inspiration by listening to the inspiring voices within yourself. But you can't just sit down and come up with them. You have to establish a relationship with these dream figures that have a kind of come and go as they will aspect to it.
So if we take this back to Nietzsche and how he was overtaken by
Zarathustra,
who was meant to be integrated into the self as
absolutely
a source of inspiration,
yeah,
but because his ego was not as developed, he could not differentiate himself between the two.
And he couldn't, remember how Jung was constantly then saying, okay, this we accept, this we don't. This we accept, this we don't. That's an ego doing what Nietzsche should have done to those inner contents.
But couldn't we also say that the intuitive can find that self in outer objects through the magical qualities of an object, and also still at the same time be conscious that that is the self?
Yes.
So that complicates the matter.
That complicates
the intuitive.
Yeah. Because that spirit could appear in a synchronicity. But I think the difference would be in your attitude towards it, where people don't look at, what's the guy's name, Hayward, on the basketball team and say, now, how should I improve myself? What is given to me to do? They idealize it, end of story. But if you have, and I think you could probably do the same thing with the synchronicity, oh wow, you know, instead of saying, okay, what's that asking of me? And as you start asking what it's asking of me, I think you'll find you idealize less. And you become the person that you've idealized.
Back to the question that Eileen raised about the third thing, moral
evaluation. Yeah.
So, say back with your George Bush example, he had differentiated that a voice outside of himself was telling him to invade Iraq,
mm-hmm.
but he never got to the moral evaluation of, is this a godly voice or mm-hmm. is this a devil voice?
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the third stage. You're still projecting it,
mm-hmm.
but you haven't integrated it. That's why written off as an illusion would come after that.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be...
Mm-hmm. I think that's the idea. Somewhere you've got to say, this is okay, this is not okay.
I just got confused because differentiation would mean, to me, separating it out. And that's the second.
Well, it could be separating it out, but I think the reason they put the third stage, that you can separate something out, but you don't have an emotional response to it.
So in that example, identity would have been, I am God. Differentiation is, there is a God.
Mm-hmm.
Moral evaluation is, was this God or the devil telling me to mm-hmm. invade Iraq? Written off as illusion would have been, there isn't anybody telling me anything.
Right. There's no God.
Yeah.
That's existentialism, you see.
That's as far as Nietzsche got, right, and God is dead.
Probably he said God is dead, but he sure acted like there was a God. That's the problem with a guy like him. But what he didn't do was separate himself out from Zarathustra. And then critique.
As a psychic existence
and to critique it. See, you see how important this critiquing bit is here, that you can assess it with respect to your value system. It's making sense so far?
Oh,
not,
yeah.
Not sure.
Well, it does show how complex. I mean, you can look at every interaction
in so many ways that you can make yourself crazy and unable to move. But then that
would be wrong, too. And yet, if you don't think at
all
about it...
Well, if you can get through life without thinking about it, I would recommend it.
You're clearly
experimenting
too late for that.
Yeah, clearly it's not the case.
I don't know that much about the Zillow of Mystery.
Yeah.
But the fact that that's on the front kind of.
Yeah.
What would you Sandy want to say?
This is your scene.
No, this is your you try it. Why is this on the cover?
Well, because the mask is reflected into the jar of full of wine or whatever you call it. And
seen by the
Is he the initiate?
That's fine. Do we know who that boy is? I don't think we do know, do we? But it's Dionysus in the back, right?
Right. Oh, he's the mask is Dionysus. This is Dionysus, the half god. Was he teacher then? No. He taught him how to plant grapes and all that sort of thing. And drink.
That's the winner.
Dionysian mask. Yeah.
A Dionysian. Okay. And the mask there is in front of that dark area, so that's what's coming out of the unconscious.
That is one of the few times that this doesn't make any sense because he's still working through those.
And then
columns, if you know.
Those exactly. Is that an initiate?
No. This is all about women.
Okay.
And so why are these two locals?
Well, what I think I remember is he's looking at wine. There's wine in there. And the wine is reflecting the mask. He's seeing the mask reflected in the wine. But behind the mask is nothing. So it's expressing this paradox of the juxtaposition of wine, which is spirit, Dionysus, which is ecstasy, and emptiness. They're all three the same thing. And I think the way Fritz David interpreted that was that these boys are her animus. So her mind is getting accustomed to this nexus, Dionysus, emptiness, wine. The boys would be her animus. Because it's the story of a girl's initiation. And the scenes that preceded this.
Right.
And so at this scene, it switches not to her, but to the boys, because it's talking about the development of her mind. And
what recognizing that spirit, ecstasy, and emptiness are the same?
Are
equivalent.
Equivalent, probably a better way to put it. Now, what's it have to do with withdrawing projections? I think, as we said, when you withdraw a projection, you get depressed. So that's the emptiness. When you withdraw a projection, you ultimately end up with more enthusiasm for life. That's Dionysus. In fact, the word enthusiasm comes from en theos, the god in the god, and that god is Dionysus. And as you work on your projections, you realize there's a spirit that runs through them. That's the wine. That's my attempt.
And that spirit, if you also look at wine as, you know, part of the development of culture, that spirit is leading you out into the world to be a part of your time and place and to address issues in your time period.
Yeah, those of you who heard Daryl on Saturday, I think that's what he was driving at, you know, to allow yourself to go with what interests you, even if it's wrong. Certainly if it's passionate, because what is leading you is a projection. And certain people might say, well, it's projection, don't do it. You would say, no, it's a projection, do it. Because the projections are leading you somewhere.
Since you talk about them as a bridge.
As a bridge to reality, absolutely. And if you keep kill every impulse you have by psychological knowledge, you're killing yourself. We need these projections. I think that's one of her purposes in writing it. But just know how to work with it. Go with the experience that you're drawn to, but think of the five steps.
But you have to go through them. You can't just, psychologically pull back and say, okay, I'm identical with this projection.
No, you
got it. It happens. You experience that. But you can pull back, you know, after it or during it and think about it a little bit. But you get caught in it.
Probably you're not going to think about it for a while.
Yeah.
You're having fun. But then a time will come, if it's based on a projection, that you'll have to think about it.
So maybe the three figures, the one is looking away. The first one, the bottom one, the old man looking away, the one who tries to stay away from the wine. That's when.
Well, I think he is the wine. But he's looking at, what we don't know is there's a wall comes up here. And it goes like this, and the initiate is on the wall. So the way I think the person we read talks about it, he's looking at her, suggesting not that he's fleeing from the experience, but that he's seeing how this is part of her journey. I get more of the looking away in that boy upper right.
But the three ways you can deal with it is looking away, looking into it to try and figure it out,
mm-hmm.
or just going into it full force and not thinking about
mm-hmm.
it.
But isn't this also like, to me it looks like it's a prank. The guy who's holding up the mask is trying to scare his friend.
No, it's no prank.
No? But I mean, it's like, he knows it's a mask. He's holding up the mask and the guy looking in the wine seeing it is freaked out.
But see, for Dionysus, the mask is the emptiness, is the God.
And there's also the idea that you should never really look at the face of God directly. Isn't that interesting? Yeah. Discussion?
Is it?
And so that's why this other boy is not looking. And you can look at it as in reflection, but not directly. And that's why they're not looking at the mask, but only seeing it in reflection. I think that's what she talked about.
I would defer to her. But see, we think of Dionysus as the party boy, but he's also emptiness. That's what is so difficult about it.
He's actually everything, right?
I guess he's everything.
Well, if you think about the five, six, seven, eight, the red book and what Jung went through.
Yeah.
The depression, the hell.
Right.
The going against and differentiating himself from the collective values that would have put him in the professorship.
Right.
At the ETH instead of him saying, no, I'm going to go with the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
In the fill of mysteries, I guess he was going through his own initiation. I mean, just in a sense, he was looking at the emptiness, but also seeing it as the next
absolutely
passion and direction and revival.
Now all that heaviness that we felt in that book is the emptiness of Dionysus.
So. I'm just trying to get this. So if you go with your passion, you go with it, the experience of then eventually you find that it's empty. Is that what you're saying?
No, but close. I think sooner or later, even if it's the real thing, or if it's a relationship should last forever, or it's an experience, you're going to end up withdrawing your projection. And that is it.
Okay.
That leads to emptiness. Of course, we don't want to do that. That's why we live in a society that projects like crazy. Because withdrawing projections means, just a big fancy word for saying, giving up expectations.
That's an emptiness for the ego, right? And
yeah.
That when the projection withdraws itself, then and you go through these other steps of working with it, that energy that was in the projection goes back inside of you.
Right.
And you don't stay in the emptiness, hopefully, forever, unless you fall into despair. Because
right.
It is a bridge
right.
to something more, which leads to the spirit coming in and re-enlivening your life then through the wine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a death before a rebirth.
I feel like I need somebody to write it in English. Oh, I mean, I kind of get it, but it's fuzzy to this. Like, I'd like somebody to say, and then I would know.
Well, it's hard because it's intentionally fuzzy. That's the difficulty. Because logically, what we're saying is impossible. But emotionally, it's reality. That if you really begin to reflect on yourself and examine your expectations, you'll have to give some of them up, and that's depressing. But in doing that, you are developing your own strengths. And as you successfully do this, you realize, these darn projections are leading me somewhere. I admire this person for that. Okay, I worked on that. I admire this person for that. I work on that. And they build on each other. And so that's the spirit, that there's this forward movement in what looks like admirations.
Okay, that helps.
Yeah.
And at any point where you concretized and thought you understood everything, you'd be stuck and in protection.
Yeah, and I don't think and whether you concretize or not isn't the point. The point is whether you're asking the right questions. Most of the time, people, when they come in to do inner work, they have already hit that point of disturbance. In either the positives got them into trouble, or the negatives got them into trouble. Or they want to take steps so it doesn't get them into trouble.
Sometimes it has to get them into trouble, and sometimes not. Like, you could have the wine experience, or what's the other one? Wine and
blood.
Sometimes it has to be blood.
And yeah.
Like for Jung, what he's going through in the Red Book, that's a body-blood experience he's having. But he did that work so that later on, you know, you could maybe do it more psychologically.
Mm-hmm. Well, what we're doing today is laying out ideas we're going to be working with the whole time. So if it sounds fuzzy, don't worry. We'll keep coming back to this again and again from different angles. Also, do stop us if you're unclear. So at least you got some idea what we're doing.
Well, and you know, you're talking about the hero. It seems like giving an example of the hero, this also ties into the levels, the stages of the animus. It seems to me like if I could describe my life as going through those, and then the energy goes to the next one.
Mm-hmm.
But it's shitty. Getting
mm-hmm. That's the emptiness.
Yeah. That when you go through those, I can't. Like, oh, I can never think of them right off the bat. But
physical. The word. A physical, deed, word, meaning.
That's fairly typical. Think of
Woman. Yeah, look at 20-year-olds. They're out with a guy with a hot butt. At 50, you're thinking, Like about 10 got hot butts, and they're all assholes. I think I'll shoot for something else.
Very young couple.
But you see how the projection has itself unfolded. That's we're really getting something down the road. That's how Jung felt. These projections aren't just messes, they're actually guides. If you give yourself fully to the experience and there's a projection, it you'll outgrow it. And you'll develop another fascination of a higher nature. Given, I mean, if you work with yourself, some people never get past.
Some people go backwards and forwards.
And there's some.
You know what I know. Just saying.
It's so I love that quote you gave us from Voltaire, that is just that the priest asking, are you sorry for your sins? Well, yeah, especially the ones I didn't commit.
Yeah, that's the idea. Let's see, where are we?
Thank you.
Well, this might be a place to stop, because the next... bit is a fairy tale, which we'll have to read and then get into, but just one with a last paragraph transitioning into the fairy tale. The last paragraph on page 11 before the quote, just so you don't feel completely at sea. What is known as integration in modern psychology is thus a remarkable and complicated process. A complicated process. In which a hitherto unconscious psychic content is brought repeatedly into the view of the conscious ego and recognized as belonging to its own personality. In the process, this content is changed in its functioning and effects. That's if you wrestle with it. And then we'll talk about it very well. But I mentioned that, how complicated it is, so don't feel that this is easy. It is terribly complicated. Practically, how do you do it? What does it tell us about the definition of reality? What does it tell us about spirituality? Is spirituality all a projection? Are there such things as spirits? And that's just the beginning of the questions that she'll be raising. But what I think is so interesting is she takes a concept of Jung's and she applies it to so many areas and then examines all its implications so that if we're going to try to look at things differently, here's a way we have to start. With this concept, we'll look at science. With this concept, we'll look at religion. We'll look at the self. We'll look at reality. We'll look at synchronicity. We'll look at morality, all that kind of stuff.
That you just read sums up the image on the front for me. It's just beautifully.
So I'm just trying to get a sense of what we can get through. Probably we'll go about this pace. So we might speed up a little bit, but let's say shoot for 10 to 15 pages a meeting. We'll have to kind of evaluate how we work together, if you feel it's going too slow or too fast, holler. So I don't think we'll get through the end of chapter 1 by next week, so... I don't think you need to read anything extra. It will certainly take us next week to finish the chapter. Is this about what you were thinking of? It's a little more theory than other stuff we've done, but to me it's a fascinating notion that they've introduced. What is projection and how much of our world is based on projection? And we'll tie it to science, religion, and so on as well.
A lot easier to do it with other people. I mean, I have the book and I read maybe two chapters, and it's like I was fun.
Yeah, she assumes a lot. Okay, well, I'll see you in two. Okay.